The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joe and Teresa Graydon. Too much licorice led to horrific leg cramps. Question. I have always enjoyed black licorice sticks as a special treat. It never bothered me until I started eating bagfuls of German salted licorice. Eventually, my heart started racing because of a drop in potassium levels. I haven't had licorice for a few years now, but last week I bought a bag of licorice sticks on a whim. I cut them into 3-inch pieces and grabbed 2 large handfuls as an evening snack. I was awake all night with the worst leg cramps I've ever had. I drank electrolyte water, ate a banana, and took cramp pills, and the fixes worked temporarily. Then the cramps came back. The next day, my legs were still extremely sore. I am now off licorice for good. It's not worth the pain or the risk to my heart. Answer, natural black licorice contains an ingredient called glycyrrhizin. It can deplete the body of potassium, trigger irregular heart rhythms, raise blood pressure, and cause fluid retention or edema. We suspect your leg cramps may indeed have resulted from an electrolyte imbalance. Your decision to avoid licorice makes sense since you appear to be vulnerable to the serious side effects of this sweet treat. Question. I'm skeptical by nature. I was hesitant to try Vicks Vapor Rub on my feet, but for the past 3 days, I have had the worst cough ever. I've been coughing nonstop. My ribs feel like I've been in the ring with Mike Tyson. 2 nights ago, I was really struggling to get any rest. My husband suggested putting Vicks on the soles of my feet. I was desperate, so I slathered on the Vicks, put on socks, and within 5 to 10 minutes, the coughing stopped. I was able to sleep all night. In the morning, the cough started up again and lasted all day long. A few hours before bedtime, I tried a prescription cough medicine, nothing. If anything, my cough seemed to be getting worse until I was almost vomiting. Hubby to the rescue again, try the Vicks. I did it, and it had the same results. Within 5 to 10 minutes, the coughing subsided. I was able to rest comfortably. I wish I knew the science behind this. Whatever it is, it's worked for me like a charm. 2 nights in a row, I'm a believer. Answer, you and many other readers agree that this remedy works. Is whole grapefruit safer than grapefruit juice? Question, I was told by my pharmacist that it was okay for my mother to eat grapefruit with her blood pressure medicine, but not to drink grapefruit juice. He said that pressing the grapefruit for juice releases some chemical from the skin that is the culprit in the drug interaction. My mother lived to be 94, eating her daily grapefruit. I guess he was right. Answer. There is ongoing confusion about the grapefruit drug interaction issue. The Food and Drug Administration disagrees with your pharmacist. So does the world's leading expert on this interaction. Dr. David Bailey and his colleagues note that, quote, all forms of the fruit, freshly squeezed juice, frozen concentrate, and whole fruit, have the potential to reduce the activity of the cytochrome P3A4, cited in CMAJ, March 5, 2013. This enzyme helps break down many commonly prescribed medications. If it is less active because of grapefruit, some drugs become more potent and riskier. Not all blood pressure medicines are affected. Some are people taking calcium channel blockers such as phenylephrine, nifedipine, and verapamil should probably avoid grapefruit. Most other blood pressure drugs are not impacted by grapefruit. Perhaps your mother was taking a medication that was not altered by grapefruit. Question. I took GABA, G-A-B-A drugs, both gabapentin and pregabalin for severe back pain. After some months, I noticed I had very foggy thinking. I couldn't remember simple things. I was sleepy all the time. I had a much slower rate of processing information. I even ran off the road in my car a couple of times, something I never did before. I stopped the meds right away, knowing there would be hell to pay. At least I was prepared for my withdrawal symptoms. My husband was very supportive and understanding during this time. He was also glad I was off the meds because he said he did not recognize the person I'd become. I have since found relief through chiropractic care. Answer: a new report from the Institute for Safe Medication Practices, Quarter Watch, March 27, 2019, warns about the inappropriate use of GABA drugs like gabapentin and pregabalin. Mental impairment, confusion, and memory loss are recognized side effects. Sleepiness and dizziness are quite common complications of both drugs. Your doctor should have warned you about the dangers of driving while taking either medicine. Adult ADHD, this is the Mayo Clinic health letter, underrecognized in older adults. You're always starting new house projects. In fact, your spouse often complains that you never sit still. However, finishing them is quite a different story. You just seem to get easily frustrated or distracted. Once again, that honey-do list has become a looming nightmare and a source of discord. On top of that, you've misplaced your wallet for the third time this week. Well, everyone has these struggles from time to time. Long-term difficulties that disrupt your life may point to adult attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. Although ADHD is most often associated with children, increasing numbers of adults, including older adults, have been identified as having the condition. Still, the condition continues to be under-recognized. Adult signs and symptoms. ADHD manifests in adulthood in a number of ways. Emotional dysregulation. This may include irritability, outbursts of anger, a low tolerance for frustration, and difficulty with motivation. Inattention symptoms. These include procrastination and poor time management, difficulty with decisions, and difficulty organizing activities. Sleep difficulties. Adults with ADHD are often chronically sleep deprived. They struggle to fall asleep, and while they may sleep deeply, the short amount of time makes it difficult to rise in the morning. Hyperactivity symptoms. These may involve feeling restless or being especially talkative or in a constant state of activity. Adults with ADHD tend to choose very active jobs. Impulsivity symptoms. Examples may include a greater tendency to end relationships or have driving violations. The predominant features of adult ADHD differ from the typical features seen in children. Hyperactivity and impulsivity may be less obvious, while inattention symptoms are more prominent. Depression and anxiety often go hand in hand with the condition. It's also common for adults to use unhealthy coping mechanisms to deal with their symptoms, including drinking, smoking, or other substance misuse. Why seek help? It may be easy to dismiss the struggles of adult ADHD, that it's just the way you tick and you manage just fine. But consider this. In addition to causing trouble in your daily functioning, your work, and your relationships, it can impact how long you live. Untreated ADHD can cut an estimated 8 years or more off your life expectancy, according to a 2015 study. The most common cause of death was from unnatural causes, especially accidents. There's no single test for ADHD. Your doctor may do a physical exam to rule out other causes of your symptoms and will ask a number of questions about your behaviors. You may be given psychological tests or a rating scale in which you score the frequency of your symptoms. It's important that these scales are filled out by people who are familiar with you, such as a partner or coworker who may be aware of how these behaviors cause problems in other areas of your life. If treatment is recommended, it may come in the form of medication, therapy, or a combination of the two. First, medication options. Medication for ADHD in adults is available to reduce symptoms and improve daily functioning. Most commonly, this involves stimulant drugs, which actually tend to calm a person with ADHD. These include Ritalin, Concerta, and others, and amphetamines such as Vyvanse, and a combination of amphetamine and dextroamphetamine, such as Adderall. Short-acting formulations of these drugs can be used to target critical hours in the day. Extended relief formulations may last 12 or more hours. Jornay PM, J-O-R-N-A-Y PM, a new formulation of methylphenidate is taken at bedtime and is designed to take effect in the early morning and last all day. Most stimulants are oral drugs, although a methylphenidate patch is available. Common side effects of oral stimulant drugs include nausea, decreased appetite, and headaches. Non-stimulant drugs also are available, including Strattera, the tricyclic antidepressant, Norpramin, and certain drugs originally designed to treat high blood pressure, such as Ketoprolol and others, and Guanfacine, which is Intuniv ER. Some of these drugs take more time to work than stimulants, and they don't have the same rates of effectiveness. However, some may be useful for treating the anxiety or depression that often occurs along with ADHD. The role of therapy. Cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, also can play a role in helping you get your life on track. In particular, CBT can help address challenges in executive function that are commonly seen in an adult ADHD, including difficulty keeping track of tasks, procrastination, and disorganization. CBT can help train you in specific skills to better manage tasks. For example, using a planner or task list, breaking down large or difficult tasks into manageable parts, and developing an advanced awareness of time. It may also help you reframe the mental distortions that often generate anxiety, depression, poor self-image, or feelings of perfectionism. You may also find benefit in family or marital counseling. These therapies can help improve interactions with your loved ones and can provide them with ways to help support you in making behavior changes. From the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, dialysis, an aid to ailing kidneys. Your kidneys perform a number of important tasks, including removing waste products and excess water from your body. Unfortunately, many diseases common with age, such as diabetes and high blood pressure, can damage your kidneys over time. Gradual loss of kidney function ultimately may lead to a kidney failure. When your kidneys fail, dialysis can help your body control blood pressure and maintain the proper balance of fluid and various minerals such as potassium and sodium. Sometimes the treatment may be a temporary measure, but most people will need it for a longer haul, often for the rest of their lives. That's why living well with dialysis is so important. When it's needed. Dialysis is needed when your kidneys can no longer take care of your body's needs. Generally, by the time you've lost about 85 to 90% of your kidney function. If your kidneys fail suddenly and rapidly, like acute kidney failure, dialysis may be used only temporarily while your kidneys heal. More commonly, dialysis is needed long term. It may be used to bridge the time you wait for a kidney transplant, or it may be used to prolong your life. How it's done. Most people undergo a version of dialysis called hemodialysis. With hemodialysis, a machine, a dialyzer, acts as an artificial kidney to filter waste, excess fluid, and minerals such as sodium, potassium, and phosphorus from your blood. With emergency dialysis, a catheter is placed into the blood vessels to perform the procedure. When dialysis is needed for longer periods, your doctor will perform minor surgery on your arm or leg to to create an access into your blood vessels. Needles are then placed to move your blood to the dialyzer and then return it as filtered blood back to the body. You can receive hemodialysis in a dialysis center, a hospital, or at home. For in-center dialysis, treatments are typically done 3 or 4 times a week. Each session lasts about 4 hours. Dialysis at home. If you're able to safely and effectively manage the therapy and have help to do so, home hemodialysis may be an option. It has significant benefits, such as the flexibility to have dialysis on your own schedule without needing to travel to a center for treatments. Data has shown that home dialysis results in better quality of life, blood pressure control, and length of survival as compared with in-center dialysis. Dialysis may be done as shorter daily sessions or longer sessions at night. Peritoneal dialysis is another form of dialysis that can be done at home. With this, a cleansing fluid is pressed through a catheter into your abdominal or peritoneal cavity. There, the fluid absorbs waste products, which after a set time then leave your body when the fluid is drained. Life with dialysis. While your treatments can help you lead a longer and fuller life, side effects are common. These include periods of low blood pressure, muscle cramps, sleep problems, itching, and fatigue, as well as complications such as infection at the access point and anemia. Your doctor can recommend ways to manage these concerns if they occur. Keeping your body as healthy and strong as possible will help you cope with the physical and emotional demands of dialysis. Continue to get adequate physical activity and follow a healthy diet. Regular blood tests and monitoring of your blood pressure will help ensure that you're undergoing the right amount of dialysis. Dialysis will allow you to go about much of your life as normal, as long as your job isn't too physically demanding. Work is still likely possible, although your schedule may need to be modified. With some planning, travel is also possible. Still, it may take time to adjust to your new routine. Think of your dialysis session as time invested in you. During dialysis, provide yourself with ample entertainment, whether it's watching TV, reading a good book, listening to music, or talking to a friend. It's normal to feel depressed, angry, or upset when you spend so much time in dialysis, especially at first. But if it's a major struggle with these emotions, as time goes on, talk to your doctor about ways to manage the stress and find support. A dialysis diet. Kidney failure can cause an imbalance in critical nutrients. By making changes in your diet, you may be able to improve how well dialysis works. And these include increased protein. Aim to eat 8 to 10 ounces of high-protein foods daily, including poultry, fish, lean, red meat, or eggs. Decreased potassium. You may need to cut back on high-potassium foods such as bananas, cantaloupe, and potatoes. Limited phosphorus. Limit high-phosphorus foods, including milk, cheese, nuts, dried beans, and peas. Reduce sodium. A low-sodium diet may help control blood pressure, regulate your fluid intake, and reduce weight gain between dialysis sessions. And then finally, monitored fluid intake. A limit of 32 ounces of fluid daily is often recommended to prevent excess fluid buildup. A dietitian can help create an individualized meal plan that's appropriate for your weight, kidney function, and health. From the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, living with heart failure. Staying ahead of the symptoms. Your heart is made to work. However, heart damage or disease can cause the heart to beat to work harder over longer periods of time. When this happens, heart muscle can gradually stretch and weaken, or it can become stiffer. The result is heart failure, meaning your heart no longer has the ability to pump enough blood to meet all your body's needs. It's a serious disease often associated with no cure, potentially causing uncomfortable symptoms or death. If you have heart disease risk factors, addressing them can help keep the disease at bay. If heart failure develops, keeping risk factors under control through medication and lifestyle changes can help you maintain a good quality of life, slow down heart failure progression, and help you live longer. Two main types. The heart has two sides. The right side pumps blood coming from the body through the lungs to pick up oxygen. The left side pumps this now oxygenated blood back to the body. Heart failure can involve the right side, left side, or both sides of the heart. However, it most commonly starts on the left side, then in later stages involves the right side with time. Heart failure is divided into two main types. The types are based on the percentage of blood pumped out of your left ventricle, a measurement known as the ejection fraction. The two types include systolic heart failure, also called heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. This occurs when the heart expands and the muscles of the ventricles, the bottom chambers of the heart that pump blood, weaken. Without a vigorous contraction of the left ventricle, the ejection fraction is reduced and less blood is pumped. Diastolic heart failure, also called heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. This occurs when the heart tissues become stiffer over time and the heart doesn't fully relax between beats. Although the measured ejection fraction remains in the normal range, less blood fits into the heart with each heartbeat, and the amount of blood pumped into the body is reduced. Both types of heart failure lead to similar signs and symptoms, such as weakness, fatigue, and shortness of breath, and swelling of the legs, abdomen, or lungs. With milder heart failure, you may have fewer symptoms, or you may become tired or just out of breath only when you exert yourself. As the disease worsens, symptoms may come on while doing everyday activities, and eventually they may occur even at rest. Underlying problems. Addressing the underlying causes of heart failure can help prevent the disease from developing. If heart failure does develop, addressing these causes is among the first and most important steps in treating it. In addition, many of these causes increase the risk of other serious problems, such as heart attack and stroke. In short, there's a big health and longevity benefit to working closely with your doctor to address these common causes. Coronary artery disease. Clogged or narrowed arteries that supply the heart with blood can lead to heart tissue death, such as with a heart attack, or more gradually cause heart damage with diminished blood flow. This can directly weaken heart muscle, causing the heart to overwork to compensate for this weakness. Addressed with a healthy lifestyle, including not smoking, getting regular exercise and activity, maintaining a healthy weight, and eating a healthy diet featuring minimally processed plant foods, lean products, and healthy fats such as olive oil. Often medications are used to control the factors such as elevated cholesterol, high blood pressure, and diabetes. Surgical procedures may be needed to open narrowed arteries. High blood pressure, hypertension. With uncontrolled hypertension, your heart has to work harder to pump blood against the higher pressure in the vessels, leading to weakening or stiffening of the heart muscles. Hypertension also stiffens arteries and contributes to coronary artery disease. And it's addressed with a healthy lifestyle, including limited sodium intake and medications to control blood pressure. Heart valve problems. A leaky, narrowed, or otherwise faulty heart valve forces the heart to work harder than normal to keep blood flowing in the right direction. Addressed with surgery to improve valve function or replace a valve. Abnormal heart rhythms. These can cause inefficient heart pumping, leading to overwork or diminished blood output from the heart. Addressed with a wide variety of options, which may include drug therapy, surgery, or implantation of a pacemaker, or a device that also can restore normal rhythm, an implantable cardioverter, defibrillator, or ICD. Many other factors can impact heart function and heart failure symptoms, including thyroid problems, structural heart defects, kidney disease, obesity, smoking, excessive alcohol consumption, severe anemia, and breathing problems while sleeping, such as sleep apnea. Addressing these issues is often part of a comprehensive heart failure plan to reduce stress on the heart so that it can operate at its best, even with heart failure. Cardiac rehab. Cardiac rehabilitation, a comprehensive therapy plan for heart failure, can be a lot to keep track of, and there's likely to be some element or lifestyle change and fine-tuning of drug therapy over time. Cardiac rehabilitation is a specific doctor-directed program for optimizing your approach to heart failure. A full program often involves 3 sessions a week for 3 months. It may involve nutrition counseling, stress management, coaching, addressing mental health issues such as depression, and help with quitting smoking. The program also offers an opportunity to adjust medications. In particular, cardiac rehabilitation features an exercise tailored program or an exercise program tailored to your circumstances. It may seem counterintuitive that exercise would be prescribed for a heart that's been overworked. However, exercise doesn't have the negative effects that chronic overwork caused by disease or by heart damage does. Exercise done in short sessions with a rest period between sessions makes the heart's work easier by improving the efficiency of the cardiovascular system. In addition, to deconditioning from lack of exercise can be a major contributor to heart failure symptoms and is something that can be improved upon. Research has shown that in many people with heart failure, a supervised exercise program can reduce hospitalizations, reduce symptoms of depression, and increase the amount of activity you can do and the ease with which you can do it. Drug therapy, one big difference between systolic heart failure treatment and diastolic heart failure treatment is the choice of drug therapy. With systolic, several drugs can improve your heart function, slow damage to the heart, and improve lifespan. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138, and please stay healthy.